In the belly of Hamburg's University Hospital, we met up with Dr. Thomas Meyer, an expert for diagnostical research on chlamydia.
Okay. First of all, it's a good idea and an interesting test system. And there's no doubt there's a need for chlamydia trachomatis testing in certain countries, like those countries that are less developed. And you have also mentioned one important disease prevalent in Africa, but also in certain parts of Asia and also in South America. It's trachoma, which is caused by chlamydia trachomatis. And this is a disease of the eye resulting from chronic infection with chlamydia trachomatis. So this is not prevalent in Europe or in the United States, because if you have a disease caused by chlamydia trachomatis in the eye, you will at some time go to a physician and then you will receive antibiotics and the disease is eliminated. But in Africa, for example, the situation is different, so they will not have the possibility to contact physicians, they will not receive treatment, and there is a risk for chronic infection with chlamydia trachomatis, and this will finally, after years, result in trachoma and may also cause blindness. In Europe and in the United States and also in many other parts of the world, another disease by chlamydia trachomatis is the urogenital tract infections, like urethritis, for example, which is caused by the same bacterium, but actually there are different genotypes. Some genotypes are causing trachoma, but other genotypes are causing these urogenital infections. Your test is also designed for detection of these chlamydia genotypes causing urogenital infection, or do you concentrate only on trachoma?
When we're talking differentiating between different genotypes, in what way are they different, like in what character? Is it only the MOM antigens, or is it like a different line?
It's the categorization into different genotypes is based on the MOMP antigen differences. That's correct. Years ago, this has been done by serology due to different antigens in the MOMP antigen, but you can also differentiate them by genetic testing, and there are differences in the MOMP region, but there are also differences in other genes in other regions. So this is not only the MOMP, which is a major outer membrane protein, but there are also several other outer membrane proteins or membrane proteins where also differences can be detected among the different genotypes. Yeah, okay, the first question about the project. I think that's a very good project, a good idea. And the technical procedure is absolutely trendy to use microfluidic devices and to incorporate biosensors. And the other point is it's a test that may be used point of care. And it's a cheap assay, and it's exactly that what is needed in certain parts of the world where these laboratory equipment as we have it here in Germany is not present. And it's also important to have a device that can be used everywhere, because if you look at Africa, Malawi, for example, you will have patients that were infected. They were not able to go to the next physician because that can be a very, very long distance. And even if they do this long journey, they need to have the result immediately. And they cannot come back 3 or 4 days later when the results are present. So that's very important to have a point of care testing. And it's also important to have a point of care treatment if this is positive, the patients must be treated immediately.
Maybe let's go over to general questions. Can you mm-hmm. talk a bit about your career?
Yes. Okay, I've studied biology a long time ago in the 80s in Germany, in Bochum, and then went to Hamburg to the University Hospital, to this hospital, and started my thesis on E. coli bacteria, and finished that in the University of Würzburg. And then I started a job in a private laboratory, again in Hamburg, and I've been working there for almost 20 years. And that was very interesting because at that time in 1990, it was just the beginning to introduce molecular tests in diagnostic of infectious diseases. And then in 2008, I went back here to the University Hospital just because in the private laboratory, it was only diagnostic testing, and I was also very much interested in doing some other things and just developing new tests, and also in teaching students. And therefore, I went back to the University Hospital, and I've been here in this hospital for now 8 years.
Yeah. And when did you start working with chlamydia?
The first time working with chlamydia was in 1990 in the private laboratory where we had developed an in-house PCR test for detection of chlamydia trachomatis. There was one of the first organisms that we considered for PCR testing.
So what is your experience with diagnostic methods for chlamydia trachomatis? What kind of diagnostics are there at the moment?
Right now we are using primarily amplification tests for detection, for direct detection of the pathogen in different clinical materials. And we are also using serology, testing for antibodies. There are some special diseases where serology may be helpful. This is not the acute infection or the local infection, but there are some cases of chlamydia infection that may become chronic and result from ascending infections, like for example reactive arthritis. And in the department of rheumatology, they sometimes have these questions and they send us samples for chlamydia trachomatis blood samples for the testing of antibodies. So if you have no antibodies, the joint disease is definitely not due to chlamydia. If you have antibodies, it may be, but that's no definite proof.
So what are the difficulties in maybe developing diagnostics for chlamydia infections? I mean, comparing industrial nations to developing nations?
First of all, these pathogens are absolutely intracellular, obligate intracellular organisms. If you want to culture them, you cannot do that with conventional agar plates. You need a eukaryotic cell system. And we did not do this here. We have done chlamydia culturing and cell cultures in the private laboratory, but stopped that in the late 1990s, because with the development of commercial PCR tests or nucleic acid amplification tests, it becomes much more sensitive and faster to detect chlamydia. So culture is no longer performed. And this is a big problem for diagnostics. Now, as amplification tests are quite easy to develop and can be obtained from different companies, this is not a big problem. But as this begins, the development of nucleic acid diagnostic tests, many laboratories are depending on culture, and this is also very difficult. It takes a lot of time, a lot of personal, and a lot of experience.
So you started talking about the amplification test. So the amplification test is very specific, as I come to understand it.
Yes.
Is it used in developing countries?
Sometimes, but most of the developing countries and industrialized countries.
More in developing countries because okay, the budget might be
with low budget in these countries. I think most of them do not use amplification tests. This is a similar situation for HIV testing, for example. If you think about a country like Cameroon, for example, they have only a very few laboratories that are doing amplification tests, and that would be the same for chlamydia.
So is it because it's too expensive, or because the laboratory equipment that is needed is like...
They have not much laboratories in these countries, and the laboratories use the tests. They are of course expensive, and most of the patients that need the test were not able to pay for it. And there is not something like a public insurance that will cover these costs.
Do you know how expensive, more or less? Some numbers?
Probably this is not the same as the chlamydia test will cost around 20 euros for the public insurances. So this is not the same in other countries. That could be even more. And if you have a private insurance, that will be definitely more. So this may also be 30 or 40 euros or dollars the price of a chlamydia test. And you can do that in developing countries only if this is sponsored by certain organizations.
NGOs.
Yes.
We were browsing some of your papers to prepare ourselves, and we found a method for confirming chlamydial antigens using fluorescent antibodies against lipopolysaccharides and/or DFR. So we were wondering, because it was a question that came up, well, can a fluorescent antibody against LPS be specific for chlamydia?
Okay, this is maybe this is part of a review paper, but could be.
Yeah, it's part of the paper Diagnostic and Therapy of Chlamydia.
Yeah, okay. This it's a test that has been used in the past very frequently, and it's based on antibodies directed against the chlamydial LPS antigen, and these antibodies are labeled with fluorescence molecules. So LPS, you're right, is present actually in all gram-negative bacteria. But the LPS structure is different. The chlamydia do have a very special LPS that lacks the O side chain. And it is a very truncated LPS, a very small one. But you're right, this may cause problems with specificity. And the same is true, for example, for the antibody tests that are based on LPS. You can also have a lot of cross-reactivity due to antibodies against LPS of other bacteria. So this is important to consider, that all these antibodies directed against LPS may be associated with some kind of cross-reactivity.
Talking more about the endemic nature of chlamydia trachomatis, so there were papers talking about that infection of chlamydia is increasing, actually, that more people are getting infected. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, do you think it is because chlamydia is spreading, or do you think because the diagnostic methods are becoming better?
I think both is important. The improvement of diagnostic methods is one reason for increased detection or increased reporting. The awareness about chlamydia may also be important, and we have now a screening system in Germany and in many other European countries, and the more people using the screening system, the more infections will be detected. So this may also cause an increase in numbers of infections. However, this is just 10 or 12% of the target population that is really using the offer of screening. So that could even be much more. And I don't think that the screening will be increased to 50% of the target population, probably not. But if it is increased to 25%, you must consider that there should actually be twice as much chlamydia infections.
So talking about dark numbers.
Yeah.
What symptoms are usually associated with the chlamydia trachomatis, or how can it be that the dark sufferers are that high?
The numbers are probably much higher because most infections do not produce symptoms. So this is considered to be around 80% in women, maybe 90%. And also in men, most of the infections do not produce symptoms. So if you have no symptoms, you will not go to a physician, and there's no reason to test. Only if you do a screening or participate in screening programs, these asymptomatic infections were detected. But nevertheless, even if they are asymptomatic, they can be transferred to other people. And other people may become infected and produce symptoms. So the asymptomatic nature is a good way for the chlamydia to spread in the population.
There are estimates from the WHO that around 500 million people worldwide are affected. I mean, it's a mind-boggling number. We couldn't believe it when we read it first. And those people are also getting treated, you know, with antibiotics. So we were wondering, how do you calculate the risk of chlamydia trachomatis developing an antibiotic-resistant strain?
So far, this has not been found, antibiotic resistance in chlamydia, even though they were treated for really long times with doxycycline or macrolide antibiotics. And this may be due to the special life cycle of chlamydia, the intracellular life cycle. But you can never be sure that there will at some time be a development of resistance. So this must be followed closely. And therefore it's important not to use only and exclusively DNA-based test, amplification test, but there should be some laboratories at least, maybe the reference centers for chlamydia, that from time to time should culture the bacteria in order to test antibiotic susceptibility. This is a bit more problematic than for other bacteria because you have to use eukaryotic cell cultures, and it's not just putting the antibiotic into an agar medium and culture the bacteria and see if they grow or not. So this is a bit more complicated, but it can be done in special laboratories.
So you just said something about the life cycle. Can you just tell us a bit more about that?
This is a special form in chlamydia because we actually have at least two different structures. They have infectious structures, so-called elementary bodies, that bind to certain receptors on the target cell. They were incorporated, form an inclusion, and in this inclusion they were transformed into reticulate bodies. And reticulate bodies are metabolically active, and they propagate, they divide in the inclusion body. And if this inclusion body reaches a certain size, they re-differentiate into elementary bodies. And these elementary bodies were then liberated by different mechanisms. And they can infect other cells or even other individuals.
Yeah.
So this is what you can see in the cell culture under normal conditions. But there are probably other states. There is good evidence for some persisting state, and this will happen if the immune system is targeting the chlamydia-infected cells, or if you use antibiotics, certain antibiotics, you can induce these long-time persisting structures. And this could be, or is likely to be, an important mechanism to cause these persistent infections.
These persistent infections then most likely are inclusion bodies that have differences in metabolics, so they are most likely less metabolically active.
Yes, but probably you have also these different forms together. There will, even in a persistent infection, there will be a low grade production of infectious elementary bodies.
So, is it known more or less what kind of metabolic reactions are going on with the inclusion bodies in the cell? So, how is the inclusion bodies? How are they interacting with the cell?
Yeah, there are some mechanisms that have been described. There is a lot of interaction between the chlamydia and the target cell, and this I don't know all these different mechanisms, but there have been some excellent reviews. You can find some ideas how the chlamydia is interacting with the eukaryotic cell. So the chlamydia are interfering with some mechanisms that allow persistence. They have to inhibit the apoptosis, so that these cells were not eliminated. They also have to interfere with the immune system in order that these cells were not eliminated by cellular immune mechanisms. And they also have to interfere with some other physiological processes, so that some essential factors, amino acids for example, are present, and the chlamydia can use them for their own life cycle.
I mean, when we're talking people about, yeah, what are you working on, we say chlamydia, they say, what?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we were
really wondering about that.
Yes, there's a, maybe you know this picture of an American STD clinic. They have just at the entrance a picture about a flower, and below it's written, chlamydia are no tropical flowers, it's a sexually transmitted disease, just to give the information.
So we're almost finished, I mean we're out of questions. Maybe as the last question, do you have any tips for, you know, the audience, because we will make this video available on the MIT website so people can look at our data and our interviews like in years to come. So do you have any tips to be safe from chlamydial infections?
What, to be safe from chlamydia?
Yes, not get infected. Prevent an infection.
Yes. If you consider chlamydia infections in Europe, you have to consider urogenital tract infections, and chlamydia are transmitted by sexual contacts. So you may say, if you don't have any sex, you will not become infected. There are some groups, religious groups mainly, who really follow this idea, but it's actually it is not possible to do that. So the other way is using condoms is an effective way of prevention, and if condoms are not used, the only way is to participate in the screening programs and to regularly test for chlamydia. And if chlamydia were detected, you can treat them. It's important to treat the partner or all partners in parallel. Otherwise, there is a big chance for reinfection. So awareness is a very important point. If you know that chlamydia can be transmitted by sexual contacts, this is a very first the first important point, and then you can use condoms in order to prevent infection. And if it is not possible by certain reasons, you should test regularly, participate in screening programs, and treat them in an early state. So then you can prevent any chronic complications.
Well then, thank you a lot for this interview.
No, thank you.